Hi everyone, welcome to our chat. I'm your host, Linda Riesenberg-Fissler, and I'm really excited today because, as you all know, I moved to Asheville, North Carolina in August, and I have been asking a couple folks at the Asheville Art Museum to join me on the podcast. And today, Lindsay Grossman and Christy McMillan have joined me from the Asheville Art Museum. And I'm going to ask them in a few seconds to tell me what their positions are and what they do. But there's a lot of, well, Asheville is just an arts culture area anyway. But so come visit us, naturally. But it's really it's really kind of fun because I moved from Middletown, Ohio. And when I came here to Asheville, it's a bigger city, but it's also the art culture here and in the society is just so wonderful, such a positive vibe and everything. So I'm really excited, Lindsay and Christy, to be talking to you today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So Lindsay, why don't you go first, because you're the one that I've been in most contact with, and then Christy will come to you and you can tell us about what you do at the museum and how long you've been with the museum, you know, little background for us.
Okay, great. So I'm actually coming up on a year at the museum, just in a couple of days will be my work anniversary. But I'm the communications manager here. So my role is to educate the public on our role in the community, what we have here as far as our offerings and exhibitions, programs, and also, you know, I communicate with everyone internally and externally on our messaging. So social media, PR, marketing, all sorts of things like that.
Sounds like a fun but demanding job.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. And Christy, what do you do?
So I'm Christy McMillan. I'm the Director of Learning and Engagement here at the museum. I've been here for about 4.5 years. And primarily what I do is I work with adult audiences at the museum on different types of learning and engagement opportunities. So I plan a wide range of programs, everything from informal talks in the galleries to more formal, you know, panel discussions, performance programs, lectures, panel discussions, group tours. So any sort of educational opportunity that you have for adults, as well as some of the more deep dive opportunities for adult audiences, such as our internship program and our docent program.
Cool. Sounds wonderful. I mean, you know, just those quick little discussions, it's like, ooh, that sounds cool. So good thing. So I don't know which one of you are going to answer the next question we're going to be talking about, but I wanted you to give us a little bit of the, you know, what's Asheville Art Museum's mission? What are you trying to accomplish in the community? Let's just kind of like start there, and then we can jump into kind of the museum's journey to date.
Sure. This is Lindsay. I'll take that one.
Okay.
So our mission is to engage, enlighten, and inspire individuals and enrich community through dynamic experiences in American art of the 20th and 21st centuries. So we are an American art museum of 20th and 21st century art. That's what we collect here. We are a collecting museum, and our role here in the community is to provide a place where our community and our visitors from other places can connect with that art and, you know, be inspired by that art. And, you know, and Christy does a great job of offering programs and different ways that people can engage with the art, from hands-on programs to tours. And so we just come up with all different ways that people can do that through exhibitions and tours. And we just want to make sure that we provide a very accessible way for people to do that. We are aware that some people can find museums intimidating, and we want to make sure that people feel welcome. Everybody should feel welcome. You don't have to be an art expert to enjoy art. And so we like to make sure that everybody feels like they can come in and enjoy it in their own way. And it's just important for us to have people in here. People and art are the most important things you can have in a museum. So that's what we're here to do.
That's great. And I love the focus on the 20th and 21st century artists. You know, a lot of folks see a lot of, there's a lot of museums out there, and there's a lot of focus on, you know, past art, which artists love because we love to study the masters naturally. But the interesting thing is that you've chosen to do the 20th and the 21st century. So I think that's kind of a unique part of your uniqueness, I guess, for the art museum.
Yeah, you know, we, within that sort of 20th and 21st century collecting focus, we also look at art and artists that are important to Western North Carolina and Southern Appalachia, and even the Southeast sort of in general. And so we don't have an encyclopedic collection of 20th and 21st century art, but we do have strengths in those areas. Mm-hmm. And so when we are curating our collection, for example, we want to show the role that Western North Carolina and Southern Appalachia played sort of influencing American art at large, and how this area and artists working here were influenced by American art at large. So it's really sort of a unique take when someone comes into our museum to really get a feel for the importance of this region.
Yeah, perfect. So I know from talking with your executive director, Pam, or Pamela, I'm sure which way she goes with. I talked with her very
much. She goes
by both. Either way.
No, I don't feel so bad. So I talked to her briefly at a Christmas party that we had here where I live. And it was really kind of interesting because she started to tell me a little bit about the expansion you just went through. So tell us a little bit about the museum's history, its journey, how you started out. And I know both of you are probably pretty new, right? If I remember from your introductions.
So I started here about a year before we went under construction, but even though I had the opportunity to work in the old museum, the construction project had been underway for long before I got here. Okay. So we had started in the mid 2000s to sort of conceptualize how we could transform places that we were in order to best accommodate not only the art that we had and the programs that we were offering, but really looking towards the future. You know, what is the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years of this institution, and how are we going to grow? And, you know, how do we sort of in a perfect world want to be able to exhibit and to engage with art? And so they had been planning for a long time before I got here. I came, as I said, in the old building and got to work in that space and really, really understood that, you know, that space was really great for what it was. We were sort of doing the best that we could in that space, but with the vision that Pam and the rest of the staff and board had, that we could really sort of be a cornerstone institution for this region.
Right.
So we were under construction for approximately, major construction about two and a half years.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And we just recently reopened in November of 2019, our beautiful new building on Pack Square. So our building really went under a major transformation. It's really sort of three structures that make up our building. One of them is interior to our block and went through sort of a gutting, complete gutting and rebuilding on the inside. One of our buildings is a historic structure that was shored up and renovated and sort of converted into our administrative and education center. And then we have another section of the building, which is this beautiful new architecture that houses our atrium as well as our new collection hall. So it provided us with oodles of more exhibition space and possibilities for programs to really serve this community now and in the future.
Oh, great. Yeah, I have not been down there yet, but it is on my list.
What? You have to come visit.
I am, and I'm going to definitely knock on your doors so say hello in person. So, but yeah, with moving in, we're finally getting settled to the point where we can start to do actually some exploring. So, like I said, it is on my list. We've had visitors come down from Middletown and We actually ate at Pax Tavern. So if you're by Pax Square, you can, you know, eat at Pax Tavern and spend all day at the Ashview, at the art museum. So,
Or you can eat at our cafe. You know, we do have a cafe on our rooftop.
Well, there you go. Then you don't even have to, you're right, on the rooftop? Is that what you said?
On our rooftop, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we have a rooftop terrace and cafe, gorgeous mountain views and amazing food. So,
well, there we go.
Weekend brunch. I could go on.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm already starting to get hungry, so would not be a good thing to do. But yeah, exactly. I was just going to add that if you do eat on the rooftop, the views from Pax Square are incredible. So there, you don't even have to leave the museum. You can go up, have a respite on the cafe, rooftop cafe, and then go back down and start exploring art again. So there we go. If you guys should be booking your tickets, get here. But yeah, I am going to stop.
When we went through the construction process, one of the things that was on our wish list was how can we sort of take advantage of our location, very centrally located in downtown, and the views that we knew were there, but we weren't able to share, really. So we added a fourth level to the core part of the building, which includes the new cafe space as well as a rooftop sculpture terrace. So it's one of the only publicly accessible rooftop spaces in Asheville. And so far, like, everybody goes up there, they take their selfies of themselves with the mountains in the background. They have a coffee out on the terrace. It's really, really nice.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. You're enticing me even more and more. So great. You know, like I said, it's on my list. I just haven't been able to like free myself to actually get out and explore the downtown and also the art museum. But I will be there and I'll drop you a note before I come. So
you should be our guest. And I do feel like that is the curse of being a local, is that it makes it harder to actually play tourist in your own town and get to actually see all of the things once you live here.
Yeah, absolutely. So, absolutely.
I totally feel you.
Yeah. I'm sure you're going through the same thing if you're out from not around, which I can tell by your accent, you're not. Neither one of you. So
you got me.
So let's get back to the art museum itself. What types of art interest you? Are you more looking at modern art? Are you into representational art? Are you into impressionist art? So just kind of talk about that a little bit, if you will.
So, you know, part of our mission is 20th and 21st century American art. And as I said, we really are looking at art of importance to Western North Carolina and Southern Appalachia. And the creative output of our region, you know, really sort of spans the gamut. You might see people working in an impressionist vein or something very representational. Or you might find artwork that's really important that's abstract. You might find craft. Glass, of course, is very important to Western North Carolina, being so close to the Penland School. And all of these things are in our collection. We don't necessarily just look at painting or just look at sculpture. We're really looking at all of the various ways that people are expressing their creativity, and we don't, you know, sort of put things in certain areas. We don't have just glass in this part of the museum or just painting in this part of the museum. We really do sort of mix all of the different creative work that we have in the collection so that when our visitors and members go through the galleries, they really get a feel for everything that's going on at a particular time or around a particular topic or in order to really get a feel for different ways that people express themselves creatively. We do have some sort of focuses within our collection. Mm-hmm. We collect the work of artists who either taught or were students at Black Mountain College. Are you familiar with Black Mountain College?
Know of it, but not very much. Let's put that way. And I'm sure our listeners probably don't either. So if you want to talk a little bit about that, that's fine too.
And that's fine. I had never really heard of Black Mountain College before I moved here to Asheville. because it's something that traditionally in art history classes isn't really taught, although that is changing within the past maybe 5 or 10 years, because there's been a lot of attention on sort of the legacy of Black Mountain. So it was a school that was in existence from 1933 to 1957 in nearby Black Mountain, which is about 15 minutes east of Asheville. And it was an experimental liberal arts college that had some of the most influential people associated with it. Josef and Ani Albers immigrated to the United States from Germany in the early 30s, came there to start the art program and run it for over 10 years. Robert Rauschenberg, John Cage, Merce Cunningham, sort of all of these big names of 20th century, mid-century important developments in not only visual art, but also dance, other sort of disciplines within the arts, you know, with an S. So that's about a quarter of our collection. We collect work by artists who either, as I said, taught there, were students there, both during the time that they were associated with Black Mountain, as well as work that they created afterwards, so that we could really see how Black Mountain affected them. Another area that we collect is work by Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians. So that's really important to the Southeast, and looking not only at traditional arts that come out of that culture, but also by contemporary artists who are living and working now. And as I said, we also do have a really deep interest in craft, since craft is such a big part of our region. So you'll see, as I said, a lot of different types of art when you come into our galleries.
Yeah, it sounds like you've got a really good representation of what's going on in the area. And the Black Mountain, was it Black Mountain College? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, Black Mountain College, kind of when you were describing it, kind of reminded me a little bit of the Taos Society out in New Mexico. So, you know, and then you've got the Putney painters or the Hudson River painters up in New York. So it's another one of those types of schools, only it's the 20th century versus some of the older associations or societies. Right. Yeah. So,
and I think that one thing that makes that a little bit different as well is that Black Mountain College was actually a school, like a physical school. So not sort of a school in the metaphorical artistic sense, but a literal college.
Yeah, like teaching actually the
exactly
versus just calling themselves a school of painters and
exactly right.
So okay, that, but you know, this really is interesting. Like I said, I guess I can ask questions from a different point of view since I haven't seen it yet, but it really is, it's very, very interesting. And I can basically say that coming from a place that had an art center, one of the few that was remaining where I taught, and then coming here and seeing that difference, it's, you know, the art center was charged with, you know, keeping art alive in this little town, this is steel town. So, you know, keeping art alive and keeping culture alive and, you know, and really striving to do that. And then we come here and it's like, oh, wow, you know, there's this art museum and it's doing a lot of stuff about preserving their own history. And it's very, very, I think Asheville knows it's very, very fortunate to have the art museum there. And I think that your representing them today is going to help to extend your reach, if you will, into the both centrally as well as, you know, internationally. So, Great job, guys. You're doing really well. Like I said, I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, maybe I need to move this up on my list.
Please do. We'll expect to see you this week.
Next week might be a good time because I don't have that much scheduled. So other than just trying to get some painting done. But yeah, so you may see me next week. Like I said, I'll send you an email. And then tell us about it now. This space just opened in November, like you talked about your new space, your new art museum. The old art museum naturally exhibited art and did other things. Can you tell us about some of the past, let's just talk about some of your favorite exhibitions to date. And also about what you have in there right now, if you can combine those two.
Okay. I'd like to speak to one of our opening exhibitions that was, I guess, one of my favorites since we've opened in November. It was called Appalachia Now, a survey of contemporary art.
Contemporary art from Southern Appalachia.
Yes, thank you. And what it was a very special exhibition because it did involve some current artists that live and work in Southern Appalachia. And the curator, it was an open call, and we considered more than 700 artists for it, but there were ultimately 50 artists chosen, and they represented all different kinds of media and different socioeconomic backgrounds and different ethnicities. And it just really was an amazing representation that, you know, people don't usually think of when they think of Southern Appalachia. It totally bucked a lot of the stereotypes. So it was a very accurate representation of current Southern Appalachia, but, you know, not what a lot of people expect. So I really enjoyed getting to see, it was video and sculpture and paintings and interactive pieces. And it was really incredible. There was a lot of really works that were very moving. And there was, while there were people from, Virginia and Georgia and all over, there was definitely a concentration of artists that were from Western North Carolina. And it was really great to see that, see us supporting these artists in our community and to give them this representation in the museum right when we were opening up. So it was very exciting.
Yeah, it's covered nicely in the Citizen Times.
Yeah, we actually got a lot of national press for that, because I think that one thing that we were trying to do was dispel this myth that sort of nothing good comes out of Appalachia, nothing fresh comes out of Appalachia, nothing important comes out of Appalachia. And I think that people were really interested and really surprised by the really sort of cutting edge work that artists in this region are making, and might not always have platforms to share that work. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we did is we published a catalog featuring all 50 artists that were in the exhibition that we had available here at the museum, but that we also made available for free on the museum's website, and it's still there. So if you'd like to, virtually thumb through it, you can. But as this opportunity for that exhibition to have a legacy as well, not only for the individual artists who were involved, but also for all of the 700 artists that were considered. We have a record on our website as well of the submissions from the open call, so that people can really see this sort of breadth and depth of important work that's coming out of Southern Appalachia.
Yeah, I think it's really important for folks to understand that Asheville, with all of its artists in the River Arts District, which is expanding constantly, this is a highly competitive art area. I'm not saying that the artists are very competitive with one another, but you quickly learn whether or not you've got the talent to hang in there. And because it is, there's so many artists here.
I don't know Linda, what it was like when, of the community that you came from, but there are several cities where I've lived where there was one art museum or one art center, one big gallery that people went to. There were maybe a couple of artists that people looked to as influencers, and it was just very limited. Mm-hmm. Here in Asheville, it's like you can't turn around without art hitting you in the face.
Absolutely.
This is a community that really is art rich, and that a lot of artists make as their home. Our environment itself is really inspirational. And we as a community sort of embrace the arts as part of our everyday lives. So, it's not like, people, even if they're not sort of working in the arts or are artists, don't have these opportunities regularly to incorporate the arts into their lives. It's really it's really a nice sort of environment to be in when you yourself are an art lover or an art maker.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to come here and make art. You can come here and be a collector. Everybody loves collectors. So just a little hint there. Take us through, because it really was interesting when you said you had 700 people apply for your opening exhibition in the new museum. And then you ended up with 50. There has to be a process that you went through to get to that 50 from 700 art. I mean, the place that I came from would have died to have 700 people apply for our shows. I mean, you know, we were happy when we got 250. So, you know, so it's kind of interesting just to hear that difference. What's the process that you go through to decide what makes it into that show? You know, I'm assuming that you have a curator there that helps with this, or you get judges in. So kind of walk through that. If you guys know, I'm assuming, Christy, you probably know. And Lindsay, you probably
We both do.
Yeah, we both. This show is a little different than other shows that we've done. It was important that we could be as inclusive as possible and that we didn't overlook any opportunities. So we had a guest curator for this one that we brought in that worked with our curatorial team. And he, along with one of our curators, they drove around and did a lot of studio visits, but based on their knowledge of who was out there and who was working, and also based on recommendations of peers in the industry. But they also wanted to make sure, like I said, that they didn't miss anybody. So in addition to that, they also held an open call. And that's how we had so many artists to consider for this particular exhibition. But of course, there's only so much space.
Yeah, right.
So it was ultimately, I believe, up to the guest curator to decide who fit into
the stories that he was trying to tell.
Yes, because he had certain themes that he was working with for the exhibition. So that's how that came about. But we just wanted to make sure that we were very inclusive, and so that's how that worked.
Yeah. So a lot of times, sitting in front of computers, or I'm assuming that they were all digital images that were submitted of their work?
For the open call, yes.
Okay.
But, you know, the curator, Jason Andrew, and our curatorial assistant, Lola Claremont, as Lindsay was saying, they drove all around the Southeast, really, visiting artists and their studios and getting a feel for their sort of overall working methods, their materials, what they were trying to accomplish, and to really get a feel for, you know, people sort of living and working and what they're doing, the places where they're working that you can't, you know, really understand just from looking at some pictures through the open call. So, I mean, they were really curating this exhibition for years before it opened.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I can't imagine doing 700 visits, or even 100 visits, even 50 visits.
I'm not sure in the end, honestly, how many people that they visited in their studio. That would be a really good question for Lola. I'd have to ask her, but it was a significant amount. They had multiple trips that they went on and sort of did these big loops throughout the Southeast to visit as many artists as they could from the ones that were either recommended to us or came through the open call.
Wow, that had to be a hard decisions to be made.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, any other favorites that you want to talk about before we move on?
We have two exhibitions that we just opened. So, in our new museum, we have two large collection halls that have galleries within those collection halls. So in our level one gallery, just last week, we opened a suite of three exhibitions that all explore the way that artists and working in a variety of media are looking at movement. So the main exhibition is called Dancing Atoms, Barbara Morgan Photographs. And it's photographs by Barbara Morgan working with the Martha Graham Dance Company and Merce Cunningham and other dancers sort of working in the middle of the century who were real innovators in modern dance. And her photographs are just really this amazing sort of representation, not only of what you can see with the human eye, but also the feelings that those dances were communicating. Wow. Another exhibition in that space just adjacent is Andy Warhol's Silver Clouds. Are you familiar with those?
Yes, I am.
But tell so us. Those are,
I wasn't familiar with them. And so when I heard we were getting Andy Warhol, I assumed we were getting his pop art.
Right.
And I was delighted to find out that this was this amazing interactive exhibition with these giant pillow-like silver balloons that you can actually play with.
I guess the silver clouds are pop art in a different way.
I suppose they are pop art, but I was imagining on the
I
wall.
I just mean like pop, like balloons.
Oh, like that. How did I not come up with that pun myself?
Anyway, so that we also show the films with Merce Cunningham's dance company of Rainforest. Merce and his dancers sort of dancing with the silver clouds so that people can understand sort of how they were used in dance. And then there's an adjacent exhibition to that called Reverberations, Exploring Movement in the Collection, where our assistant curator, Hillary Schroeder, chose works from our collection in a wide variety of media, but the things that they have in common is that all of the artists were looking at ways that they could communicate movement in static media, so photography, sculpture, drawing, printmaking, et cetera. So that's on one level. And then on level three, taking up the entire exhibition hall is an exhibition that we opened about 2 weeks ago called A Telling Instinct, John James Audubon and Contemporary Art. Mm. So John James Audubon and his prints, and people might know his prints like Birds of America, you know, these great portfolios where he was studying birds and sort of making these absolutely gorgeous prints of them in the mid-19th century. But he was also a storyteller. He was using sort of the poses of the animals and the way that they were interacting with each other to sort of tell human stories and communicate human emotions. And so our curator, Cindy Buckner, worked with Marilyn Loffer, who's the director emerita of the Jules Collins Smith Art Museum, to really look not only at how Audubon was using animals in a storytelling mode, but also how other contemporary artists working today sort of follow in that same model. So how are they using animals in sort of maybe non-traditional ways in their artwork? And it's also that exhibition has gotten a lot of attention because it's a real unique take on Audubon and his printmaking.
And what I really like about that exhibition is that it is a wonderful combination of art from our collection and art from other places in America. We've got a wonderful artist by the name of Adonna Kerr from California, and she's got two amazing works in that exhibition, as well as the prints, the Audubon prints, come from the collection of two local collectors, Bill and Peg Steiner. They have one of the largest, if not the largest, private collection of original Audubon prints, and it comes from right here in our area. So I love that we keep that local connection in there. And then we do have some other local artists represented in that exhibition. So I love that it is a nice mix of work from our collection and work from throughout America, because it kind of keeps that dialogue going of art that is from our region, that it's influenced from other places in America, and in turn, art other places in America that is influenced by things that are coming from our region. So,
right.
And also, I mean, it's just really great animal art. Like, if you're an animal lover or a nature lover, you're going to enjoy this exhibition.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. So just curious, before I move on, did we cover everything that you wanted to cover on what is actually up in the museum right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. one of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about is in your future exhibitions that you're coming with? Do you have certain themes that you're looking at now? Any particular artists?
Well, we plan out exhibitions really far in advance. You know, we've got a lot of exhibitions planned throughout, 2022. So we won't share all of those as there's still, confirmations, that need to happen. But I can tell you what's coming up later on this spring that we're really excited about. We have a very large exhibition coming May 21st. We have Across the Atlantic, American Impressionism Through the French Lens. And that exhibition features more than 70 works. And it's a traveling exhibition that comes to us from the Reading Museum in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And it's looking at the Impressionist movement and the original, French Impressionism, and how Americans have been influenced by that movement. So you see, we're going to be having some works from the great French Impressionists, and then also works from American Impressionists, and you can see how they were influenced by that. And so I'm really excited about that one. And then we also have one that is opening on June 11th, Our Strength is Our People, the Humanist Photographs of Lewis Hine.
So Lewis Hine, are you familiar with him at all, Linda?
No, I'm not, unfortunately.
He was a photographer working in the early 20th century who was really documenting sort of the immigrant experience and sort of the people that were building the infrastructure of this country. And so the photographs, I think, are all black and white. They're all just really powerful representations of the sort of work that people were doing, but also the conditions that they were doing it in. So it's a really great look at sort of this time capsule of, the realities of our country in the early 20th century. So that's a really great exhibition that I hope that people will come see too. In terms of how we choose our exhibitions, we always look at stories that exhibitions can tell that complement our collection of 20th and 21st century American art. So as I said, we're not necessarily encyclopedic American art museum. We don't necessarily have tons of like California impressionism or, work that's more regional to other parts of the country. But we can tell sort of a story at large of what was happening in our country. But there are definitely stories that we can't tell. So when we look for exhibitions, we're really looking at things that sort of shed some light on American art of the 20th and 21st century that complement what we have in our galleries.
Cool. I just want to let you know, when I put this out to the group of artists and people that listen to my podcast, they are more plein air / impressionistic, representational artists. So we'll highlight that you're going to talk about that, because I'm sure there'll be a number of my friends and listeners who will travel here for the French Impressionistic exhibition. And that is in May, you said?
It's basically Memorial Day to Labor Day. So it'll be here all summer.
Well, there you go.
I did travel up to the Reading Public Museum about a year and a half ago when they were just opening this exhibition. As Lindsay said, it's a traveling exhibition. And if I'm not mistaken, we're the last stop on the tour. But it was jaw-dropping, this exhibition, what they have put together. People, I think, are going to be absolutely delighted by it. We do have some American Impressionism in our collection that will complement this exhibition very well, but nothing to the extent of the numbers. As Lindsay said, it's over 70 works of art, and many of them are paintings that I think artists would really delight in seeing, this wide variety of artists from France and the United States, and the way that they've incorporated these impressionist techniques in their work, not only from the late 19th century, but also going into the early and mid 20th century. It was really, really a beautiful exhibition that I think everybody would love.
Do either of you, have you ever heard of the person by the name of Jean Stern? And it's okay if you haven't? No? Okay.
No.
Jean is a, well, he used to be involved with museums out west. And I'm not, and I can't reach my book that has his thing, but he put together a book that was basically about Monet and talked a little bit about American artists and following Impressionism. And we can have more of this discussion offline, but okay. He lectures is the reason why I'm bringing this up on French mm-hmm. Impressionism. So, and I do have his email and I can drop it to you if you have an interest. Like I said, we can talk this offline, but Jean is very, very, very knowledgeable about the French Impressionists. I've worked with him a little bit back when I was working with a plein air painter by the name of Kevin McPherson, who you may or may not know, but Kevin is known internationally and I was mentored under Kevin. And so It was, you know, it might be a natural extension. Maybe we could work something out where we could possibly get Jean here, but we'll work that offline. But when you were talking about that, my mind just jumped to, ooh, he may just be interested to come and see. So
right.
Oh yeah.
I am gonna drop him a note to let him know that this is coming up. But yeah, so it's kind of interesting. That my mind's always jumping around. Sorry for that. So people
who know, so is mine
talking to two people who think the same way, so it's exactly. Not a problem. Yeah, you're our people.
Yeah, it's one of these things of people who don't know me very well start talking and I come out of left field and they just kind of have this look on their face like I don't see where you're going. And it's like, oh, okay.
It makes sense if you follow it. But you gotta stick with it.
Yeah, so really interesting there. So just let's talk a little bit about do you accept artist solicitations from people who want to exhibit in your museum, or do you just put out open calls occasionally? Do you kind of like file things away when somebody contacts you possibly for future exhibitions, or do you just not do that at all?
No, we do actually. So our curatorial department is very active because we are a modern and contemporary art museum. It's sort of a different working model from curatorial staff or collection staff that sort of works, you know, nose deep in the vault or nose deep in the library. We really do sort of spend a lot of time out of the museum visiting collectors, visiting artist studios, because, you know, we are a museum that includes artwork that's created now. Somebody remarked to me the other day, you know, I walked into that exhibition and the date on that artwork was 2020, and I had to really sit and think about that. This is art literally just created before it was hung in the museum. And so we do have folks that reach out to the museum all the time, either artists that are wanting to share their work with us, either, you know, to exhibit here or to, you know, have us consider to bring into the collection. We also have artists that sort of work together as a collective and put together exhibition prospectus. That we consider. So that is something that it happens quite often. The curatorial team, you know, looks at each individual prospectus or visits the artist and really thinks about ways that, you know, they might bring something new to the museum's collection or new to this conversation of, you know, contemporary art in the United States or Southern Appalachia. So their contact information is on the website if anybody is interested in reaching out to them.
Great, thank you. Just a quick question about, since there are so many artists in the art district, River Arts District, is so close. Do you work a lot with local artists? Are there a lot of local artists that come in and volunteer or work on boards or committees? How does all of
those things?
All of those things. There we go.
Yeah. So we have working artists who sit on the museum's board. That's really important for us to have those perspectives of, you know, artists and sort of what the status is of artists right now and the challenges that they face and how they want to be incorporated into the museum community. We have artists who work here, artists who volunteer here, and we also have a lot of artists who teach with us. So we have folks that, either go into classrooms as art educators for some of the different grant-funded art education programs that we have. We also have a really robust adult studio program that all of our teaching artists are contractors. So folks that, you know, really love working with adults to teach them, you know, specific media or processes, or really looking at, you know, for example, introducing them to different types of painting, or really focusing on something in particular. And we have information about all of those opportunities, either job opportunities, contracting opportunities, or volunteer opportunities on our website.
Yeah. And if you're interested in taking an adult studio class, we do have all that on our website as well.
Yeah, so we have a lot of artists that do participate in our adult studio program as students, as Lindsay said. People that might want to, you know, have a more focused experience with something in particular that they're working out, or a new medium or technique that they want to learn. We have a number of artists that, for example, are sculptors, but they say, like, I really want to improve my drawing skills, so I want to take a class at the museum. So that's going really well. We had a short session in the fall where we offered a class and a workshop, and then this spring really had a lot of classes and workshops that we offered in a variety of different media: watercolor, oil painting, drawing, life drawing,
barn quilts.
I mean, in this really like wide variety of stuff that we offered, and we're currently putting the finishing touches on our summer session, which is more sort of one-day workshop oriented, because what we have found is that folks, of course, love to travel during the summer, or we might have people that are coming in from out of town who really just want to, you know, have an experience for a day or two rather than, you know, a 4, 6, 8, we even have like a 10-week class that we're offering right now. And so those will be posted on our website within the next week or so if folks are looking for something to do in June, July, or August.
Okay, we're gonna actually ask you to repeat this at the end of the podcast, but since we're talking about your website so much, tell us what that is.
AshevilleArt.org.
Well, that was real easy.
Asheville. Yeah, we try to make it as easy as possible. Remember to put the E in Asheville, an E after Ash and an E after Ville.
That's correct. Yep. So, okay, cool. And you also have, do you have Facebook page and Twitter and all of that?
We're very active on Facebook and Instagram, and our handles on both of those are Asheville Art Museum. And then on Twitter, we are Asheville Art.
Okay. So, all right. So one thing I want to tackle, we're getting close to, I know I'm tying you up for a while, but this is a fascinating conversation. So want to make sure that we capture everything that we talked about in our emails. So you mentioned that the French Impressionist exhibition is going to be coming from Reading, Pennsylvania. So there is some type of working collaboration, if you will, for those traveling ones. Are you like associated with other museums? And what I'm talking about is, like, I saw a Monet exhibit in Cleveland, and then it was going to San Francisco, and then it was, you know, gone. So do you have something like that going on with other museums that are similar to yours, that you have a working agreement to pull in some exhibitions like the French Impressionist one?
Not necessarily, I think, the way that you're describing it, but usually what happens is museums or independent curators, or there are also some exhibiting agencies that organize exhibitions, and then they send out prospectuses to different museums around the country and around the world. And so, you know, we look at those prospectuses, we think about how the different exhibitions might dovetail, as I said, or complement our collection and what we present here in Asheville. We also think about the size of the exhibition, whether we have it's, you know, the square feet, the linear feet, the wall feet, in order to accommodate, you know, what the exhibition has. Can the artwork, you know, physically get into the museum, which sometimes with contemporary art, you know, it gets really big, and sometimes it can't.
Right.
But also sort of the budgeting and how much it would cost. So, for example, if there's a $2 million King Tut exhibition. You know, that's not necessarily something within our range of what we can present, and neither would we have, you know, the space to present something like that.
Right.
But there are a lot of exhibitions and museums that are traveling things that are sort of comparable in size to us in different communities around the country that make sense for us to have here in a lot of different ways. And so, as Lindsay said, we sit down usually about once a month or so with the curatorial team and the learning and engagement team to look at different exhibitions that are being put on the table and to think about whether they're a good fit for our museum, and if so, how far into the future do we have to sort of plug them in? Because we not only look at sort of, you know, what's coming and what would be great for us, but we think about all the different things that will be on view at the museum at any given time, so that we're offering a variety of different artworks and experiences for visitors when they come in.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so yeah, I guess my understanding of how that works probably wasn't very good, but thank you for, because I always just thought.
Oh, no, it's museums are funny places. I'm sure that every, you know, different industry has its own quirks.
Yeah, yeah, I always thought it was some kind of collaboration where it sounds like it's more, there's a listing and people can choose. And there probably are times where they actually do collaborate because of monetary, the cost of bringing the big names into their museum.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes there are relationships between different directors or curators or educators among different museums around the country, and they say, hey, you know, I'm putting this thing together. I know that you have a lot of great work in your collection that would fit in well with this exhibition. What if it was shown at my institution and at your institution? Right. And so that's how a lot of these sort of traveling exhibitions get started, is really relationships between people working in the industry.
Yeah, good. Thank you for that. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about the museum staff and possibly any volunteer opportunities that are available, so that anybody in Asheville that possibly could be listening and would like to get involved, they would know who to contact. So can you talk about a little bit about the museum staff and any volunteer opportunities?
Yeah, so we have professionals working on our staff in a variety of different fields. I think a lot of people think that when you work at an art museum, it's because you're an artist or you're an art lover. Well, all of us sort of share this passion for the arts. We all sort of have different skill levels. So we have, for example, a full-time grant writer at the museum, or people who hang the art, people that research art, people who take care of our facility. So it's a really sort of wide range of people that work here. Currently, we have a couple of positions posted. We are looking for a director of external affairs. So that would be sort of the main fundraiser, or the person sort of overseeing fundraising and interactions with the community and sort of the country at large at our museum. We also were looking for some custodial staff, and always have a standing announcement for adult studio instructors. So if any artists are interested in looking at that, there's information there on our careers page, which is ashevilleart.org/careers. In terms of volunteer positions, if you go to ashevilleart.org/volunteer, we have a number of positions that we're always sort of on the lookout for great people for, to volunteer at our welcome desk or in the museum store. We also have opportunities for people to volunteer sort of less on a regular basis, which the store and visitor services are. But if people are interested in sort of a day here, a day there, we have opportunities to volunteer with special events or with our learning and engagement team. As I mentioned sort of at the top of the podcast, we do have some more deep dive volunteering opportunities. So we do have a docent program, which are community volunteers from all walks of life, really, who go through an intensive one-year training program to learn not only about our collection and exhibitions, but also how to engage people with artworks. And then they, after that year of training, are the main folks that lead tours through the museum. We also have an internship program for high school, college students, and postgraduates to be able to work on different projects closely with museum staff to help really develop their skills in their chosen field.
Cool. Great. Thank you for doing that. Again, a lot of the information that was just shared can be found out on their website, which was Asheville Art.
Asheville Art.
That's right.
Yep. .org. And I want to thank both of you for taking time to talk with me and my listeners about the art museum there here in Asheville. I probably have taken up more time than I said I would for.
Oh no,
it's flown by.
Yes, no, thank you for having us.
Yeah. So anything else? We're winding up the conversation now. We talked a little bit about upcoming exhibits. If you want to plug those again, you're more than welcome to, with dates and times. And anything else that we may not have covered that you want to tell us about, now's the time to do it.
I just thought I'd let everybody know that we are open daily, except for we're closed on Tuesdays. We are open from 11 to 6. And then on Thursdays, we are open until 9 p.m. It's really fun to come here on Thursday evenings. We often have a public tour at 6 p.m. on Thursdays. And then, you know, it's fun to do the tour and then grab some small plates and a drink up at the cafe and watch the sunset over the mountains. It makes for a great date night or a, you know, friends night out. So that's a fun way to experience the museum. And, you know, just check our social media and our website to see all the fun programs and events we've got coming up and all of our exhibitions that are coming up. Because in addition to those main special exhibitions we do have a lot of other smaller scale exhibitions that go on in our core galleries, and we always have something new going on, and we welcome all visitors, guests, come see us.
Yeah. So just one question from me. Are you guys plugged into the Asheville Newcomers Club at all?
So we, I've gone out, I think, once or twice to do presentations about the museum to the Asheville newcomers when we were under construction, because folks were like, what is going on that corner? Why is that fence there? Our construction project was really large. And so we went out to sort of talk about what was going on. Since we've reopened, we've had, I think, probably on average, a different sort of subset of the Asheville newcomers coming in each month for a tour, and those are usually pretty big groups. You know, the Asheville newcomers is such a big group that they have these sort of special interest groups within the larger group, and they come in and do a tour and have fun exploring the museum, and then usually have lunch together up in the cafe.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure that they were tied in with you guys, at least, you know, for touring and so, because I know there's a lot of art culture groups and art lovers interest groups in there. So, and there, we just got an email the other day, there's 500 people that belong to that club now. So
it's really big. I think people really like making connections with people. And then it's even if they've been here for more than 5 years or something, and they're no longer newcomers, it's really hard to sort of leave the community that they've built up in that group.
Right, right. Yeah, nobody's kicked out from what I understand.
Right.
it's your choice to stay or go. So, okay. Well, again, tell us your handles or social media handles and your website so that it's right here at the end so people can see it or hear it.
Sure. It is. Our website is ashevilleart.org. You can find us on Instagram and on Facebook. At Asheville Art Museum, and on Twitter at Asheville Art.
Yes, and I want to thank Lindsay Grossman and Christy McMillan for joining me today and telling us about this wonderful art museum that's right here by me that I'm going to be visiting a lot, I'm sure, as soon as I can pry myself out of my place. So, please come and visit Asheville and the Art Museum. I know a lot of folks that are listening are artists. I think that you'll find this to be a very interesting place, as well as a, you know, if you weren't convinced that the Asheville Art Museum is a place that you need to go see after this conversation, I don't know what's wrong with you guys. So like I said, I'm looking forward to being there. I will stop by or let you guys know that I'm there so that I can stop in and say hello. So for
look forward to putting a face to a voice.
Yeah. No thanks, Linda.
Yeah, you're welcome. And in the future, if you have something that you want me to highlight on the podcast, please drop me a note and let me know. I will be more than happy to do that for you guys. And let's see what else is tomorrow. I am recording an art chat with Michael Harding, the Color Man, as he is known. Michael's, as all of my people that listen know, I paint with Michael Harding's handmade oil paints, which are made in England. So Michael is going to be on tomorrow, and one of the artists that are one of his ambassadors by the name of Tim Reese. And Tim is a wonderful artist. Interesting background on how he got started. So we'll talk to Tim about that as well. And there will be some more art chats coming up on some research that I'm doing around the 7 great foundations of a painting. I'll be putting together more or less papers, if you will, and kind of put that out there for everybody to think about and expand their knowledge on that. So again, thank you, Lindsay and Christy. Thank you so much for being here with me, and everybody take care. Bye for now.